Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Public universities in Ohio were thrilled to hear they're being given more money by Governor Kasich, in his proposed budget at least, in 2016, but were not necessarily as thrilled to hear that they have to put a cap on tuition and cut costs for the following year. Governor Kasich has proposed higher education tuition caps, along with a few other plans, to combat rising costs of college and its effect on financially struggling students. Joining us in the studio to discuss the governor's proposal is Tim Keene. He's director of the Office of Budget and Management for Ohio. That means he is the Ohio Budget Director. Welcome back, Tim.
Glad to be here, Ann.
The governor wants to cut the fat. No one can complain about cutting fat. But what indicators tell you that there is fat?
Well, I tell you, if you look at the cost of higher education and its growth over the last number of years, it has significantly outstripped inflation. And by some measures, it's outstripped healthcare costs, which I think by conventional wisdom, people think are where we have the greatest growth in the economy and in government. But in fact, those costs of institutions of higher education have grown faster than healthcare.
The governor's proposed budget calls for a 2% increase each year. Why the increase coupled with the request for cuts?
Well, again, we want to provide increased support to the institutions of higher education through our state support, our state share of instruction. We want to do that for a couple of reasons. First, I mean, we're supportive of institutions of higher education. We have some fantastic colleges and universities in this state. We've worked very well in the Kasich administration with the two-year schools and the four-year schools in developing what is a nationally recognized funding formula to distribute aid to the schools. We have had a good partnership on how we allocate state capital appropriation support to build and repair facilities on institutions. And so we want that partnership to continue, not only with additional funding, but also with these initiatives to try to contain costs and produce savings for the operations of the institutions.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the cost of higher education in the state of Ohio. My guest is State Budget Director Tim Keene. Coming up, we'll be hearing from others on this topic. If you have a question or comment for Tim Keene, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One critic, I think, put it this something like this, that public colleges and universities in Ohio have gone from being state-funded to state-subsidized to located in the state of Ohio. The level of support for higher ed in Ohio is a big reason why students are paying and their families are footing so much more of the bill.
You know, Ann, for many years, this has been the case. I mean, I remember in the early days of my work in the state of Ohio, I'd go to the House Finance Committee and hear the chancellors of the Board of Regents talk about how Ohio was a high tuition state. And so this is a circumstance that has existed for many, many years. Now, over the last 6 years, Ohio has seen the second slowest rate of growth in tuition in the country, according to statistics compiled by the College Board. So we've started to get a handle on this, although there's a long way to go. One of the challenges we face here is that from the state of Ohio's perspective, we don't manage the institutions. They are freestanding institutions governed by a board of trustees, managed by presidents in their own administration. The state provides support. We don't necessarily control the other expenses and the other costs at these institutions. And so we are a funder, but we don't manage these institutions.
The governor's assigned a 9-member panel to focus solely on higher education costs. The panel's going to finalize its recommendations by October. What happens then?
Well, the idea is, again, this is a continuation of the Kasich administration's working with the institutions. The governor called the presidents down to the state house. They had a discussion, and the governor signed this executive order to create the task force and to look at affordability, to look at cost containment. How can we help keep make college affordable? And the presidents of the institutions have been very supportive. I mean, I think they recognize that there's an issue here that has to be addressed. We have to think how we cannot price ourselves out of the market. I mean, that's just not good for the state of Ohio. It's not good for the citizens, not good for the economy of the state of Ohio. And so after this task force comes back with its recommendations, there'll be, if there's law changes necessary, then I think that you'll see some action in the General Assembly that the governor will push. There is a follow-up provision in our budget that requires each institution individually to produce an efficiency study based on the work of the task force that will look at how they can take those broad recommendations and begin to contain costs, begin to focus on how we can reduce costs to students.
The state's 14 public universities have more than doubled the debt they owe in recent years to an unprecedented $6.5 billion. That's according to a Dayton Daily News report. Are there provisions in the budget to address this trend?
You know, the financial condition of our universities, on the four-year universities, is actually very strong. And so they have the capacity to set aside modest amounts of their budgets to retire the debt that they have issued. Again, if you think about that, it's a generally understood tenet of public finance that to the extent that you are building buildings, taking care of long-lived assets, that you do want to spread that cost over time so that the users over time help contribute. And so it's appropriate for them to enter into these debt arrangements, provided that they make sure that it is not a disproportionate portion of their operating budget. And I don't believe we've gotten to that state yet.
Well, there's a couple issues there. One is that the state, in its capital budget, used to provide a lot more funding to state universities and colleges for building construction, and it doesn't anymore.
Well, the state, we have been increasing the support over the last several years. It is true that, I mean, look, 10 or 15 years ago, there was a seminal event that impacted the ability of colleges and universities to get as much state capital support. And it was the Durolf school funding court case that required the state to be a much more active participant in the funding of capital facilities for primary and secondary schools. Frankly, that consumed a lot of resources that otherwise might have gone to institutions of higher education. So there was a reduction in the rate of growth that they otherwise might have seen. I think we have tried to work very closely with the universities and the Kasich administration to target the capital dollars that we have. It has been growing over the last couple of years. But again, our universities are getting to, the buildings are at a certain point where they need to be renovated, repaired, perhaps replaced. And I think you see that both based on the debt that's been issued by the universities and through the increased support that the state is providing.
Another issue is that the governor proposed freezing tuition, but not fees, and an increasing percentage of the student debt is coming from paying fees. For instance, paying off the fees that are issued so that colleges and universities can pay off those loans for those construction projects, like the big for all kinds of things. I'm not going to pick on any one university or college, but a lot of them are building things to make the university more attractive to students, like exercise facilities, really, really fancy student unions, that kind of thing. The students are shouldering the burden of that, and there's no freeze on that.
Well, again, the costs, these fees are for particular amenities or particular programs that all the students benefit from.
But they don't necessarily all benefit from it.
Well, they're generally available to the students. Some will perhaps use them more than others. But the thought is that we allocate those costs to the users. Notwithstanding the growth in those fees, that's not where the big dollars
are.
It is the tuition itself and the general fees, which are subject to these tuition restrictions, where the vast majority of the cost lies.
An average student comes away with about $29,000 in debt after a 4 or 5 or 6 year, degree program at any given college or university. The student activity fees at Bowling Green State University are $655 a year. That comes out to about $2,400 at the end of a 4 year program, if you will. That's about 10% of that debt. is coming from fees. Now, a lot of students, they can't even afford football tickets. They don't, you know, they're working, they're doing other things. So it's not, it seems not fair. Or what about things, something like use fees, consumption fees for students instead of overall fees?
Well, again, my understanding is that the this is not my area of expertise, I will say. But I think broadly what it does is it speaks to the need to put together a task force, as the governor has done, to try to take a look at what is happening with the operating costs of these institutions. And what is it that we can do to try to get a handle on that? I mean, some would suggest that the if you look at the university today, generally, that it looks very similar to the way it looked 30 and 60 and 90 years ago, putting aside the new buildings. But the actual governance and operation, what other institution of society has been unchanged for this period of time? And so we have to take up, and again, this rate of growth, this cost increase that we've seen, and I'm talking, this is overall cost increase. This is without regard to whether what the split is, tuition or state support. Mm-hmm. I mean, the total cost has been outstripping inflation and outstripping even the rapid growth of healthcare. And so, you know, regardless of who's paying, whether it's a subsidy or whether it's tuition, this has to be looked at, and that's one of the major focuses of the budget-related proposals that the governor's introduced.
We have an email from a listener who has an idea, who says, the highest growth in cost for higher education has been in administration. The salaries of deans is astonishing, and it seems the number of them continues to grow. How does the state expect the administration to cut the fat when the deans and higher administrators are the fat?
Well, again, these are self-governing institutions, and it's up to the boards of trustees, and up to the presidents of these institutions to take a look at these. Now, they're going to get a push here from the from some of the things that are happening here in the legislature. I mean, the fact of the matter is, when tuition is capped, it will require people to think about the costs. When there is a task force that outlines the that outlines a whole series of options that people might consider, the institutions are going to have to look at these, because if they don't, there will be reaction in the state legislature. And in fact, there are some proposals. I know Senate President Keith Faber has a proposal which is being heard in the legislature now, which calls for a 5% reduction in overall cost to students. And I think this discussion has reached a point where the institutions will need to make some change, because the public at large has concerns, the General Assembly has concerns, clearly the governor's indicated their concerns.
In addition to freezing tuition costs, the governor proposed offering bachelor's degrees in certain fields at community colleges, and some are concerned that this would drive up the cost for community colleges and ultimately even for students seeking just two-year certification degrees at those places.
Well, this is a proposal that we worked with both the two- and the four-year schools on. This is a limited proposal. Circumstances where a four-year, because the four-year and the two-year institutions have to work together on this. If a four-year institution does not want to offer a certain degree program and the two-year institution is willing to do so, they will strike an agreement and the two-year institution will offer, in these limited circumstances, four-year bachelor's degrees. I mean, essentially what it does, it offers specialized programs that we think can be helpful in workforce development here in the state of Ohio.
The governor said that a cap and freeze on tuition rates likely wouldn't have a huge effect on an individual's student debt, but that it would signal that we know how tough it is. So what's the point? At what point can people start to say they're going to, you know, what are you shooting for in terms of when people can start to see some real difference in what it's costing them?
Well, again, I think over the term of the Kasich administration, you see the tuition is amongst the slowest growing in the nation. Again, it's the second slowest growing, only to Maryland, in the last 6-year period of time. I think that these initiatives will help us keep ourselves in that same position. So, you know, to the extent that tuition is frozen in the school year, in fiscal year 17, which would be school year 16-17, that's a difference, because otherwise, what might you see? 3, 5, 6% increase. So there will be a difference delivered there. Again, I think some of these, some of the study groups, some of the analysis that is being called for will begin to yield some benefits that will slow this rate of growth and perhaps reverse it.
Tim Keene, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
And always my pleasure.
Tim Keene, he's director of the Office of Budget and Management for Ohio. Coming up, more conversation about the cost of a college education in the Buckeye State. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Today, we're discussing Governor Kasich's plans to cut tuition costs and how those plans will be implemented over time. Joining us over the phone is Scott Jasek. He's editor of InsideHigherEd.com. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
We also have by the phone David Kramer. He is the Vice President for Finance and Business Services and Treasurer at Miami University. Welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Scott, let's talk about a few things that Tim Keene, State Budget Director Tim Keene, mentioned a few minutes ago. One being that nothing really has changed in higher education in decades and decades, and that seems to be what's being reflected, maybe perhaps, or as part of the issue when it comes to the costs of higher education these days.
Well, you know, that's a very popular thing to say, and I'm not sure it's entirely true. If you look at higher education today, it's educating a much larger share of the public than was traditionally the case. Once upon a time, higher ed was educating the elites and maybe some teachers and preachers. Now it's educating all kinds of people. We are much more ambitious in who gets some kind of higher education. There are online degrees offered by colleges and universities throughout Ohio. That did not used to be the case. You've got places like U of Cincinnati that do co-op education. That is a very different model. So the whole nothing has ever changed, I think, is, while there may be some truth to it, is actually really overstated.
David Kramer, from where you sit at Miami University, what do you make of that assertion that nothing's really changed in how higher ed operates in the state of Ohio?
Well, universities are adapting, and we are doing many things that were just mentioned. There's a lot of emphasis that is occurring today on cost containment that I don't think was as evident even just a decade ago. I believe Mr. Keene referenced the fact that Ohio is second in controlling the rise in higher education over the last decade. And actually, if you look at our universities, we're the only group that where the rise in the costs of our tuition at our public universities in Ohio is actually below the inflation rate for the last decade. Here at Miami, we're into our third round of cost containment kinds of issues, and we've implemented programs like Lean. We've had hundreds of projects in which we try to focus on how to strengthen our service and lower our costs. So I think institutions are doing things. The one challenge that remains is that we're still very human resource based. We're very our physical facilities make up a significant piece of our costs, and those are areas where costs are constantly rising.
Is that where you're going to start to feel the pressure to cut?
Where we have to feel the pressure is try to find where there are efficiencies. What we're trying to avoid are doing things that damage the quality of the educational experience. It doesn't do us any good to make changes that lengthen the time to graduation, lead to more students not being able to graduate. So we try to focus in areas where it has the least impact on a student and to find efficiencies rather than just cutting costs.
Scott Jasek, you've said that tuition caps, such as are proposed by Governor Kasich in the budget, actually cost students more money. How does that work?
Well, it all depends. If a state is providing enough money for students to get through, maybe a tuition cap is great. But in many states that have had tuition caps and not provided enough money to the colleges and universities, what you see is the number of sections reduced. Mm. You see academic advising cut. If you want to do the thing that will help the most students save the most money in public higher ed, you will assure that they get out in 4 years. Going from 5 years to four, even with a tuition cut, really hurts you. So a tuition cut sounds good, but you need to look at the question, how are colleges dealing with their budgets? Is there enough money overall to serve the students? And it's also important to remember, if you are a very low-income student, you are probably having most of your college or even all of it paid for. So tuition cut actually doesn't benefit everybody. And if the colleges don't have the resources to do what they need, students can end up paying more.
Because if you're also a very low-income student, you probably have a part-time job or something like that, and you're further restricted in when you can take courses.
Absolutely. And you also have to look at this over the long term. States that do tuition freezes, they tend to do them and then come out of them, frequently coming out of them with a big increase. So that's great if you happen to be there in the right 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. It's lousy if you arrive later. They are very politically popular. But the real question is, are the budgets appropriate so that students can get a good education and get a good education in 4 years and leave with a degree? To some degree, you get what you pay for.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. David Kramer at Miami University, are you having these sorts of conversations? Are these the kind of issues that you struggle with when you're talking about tuition caps?
Absolutely, and they're the issues that the presidents of our public universities have been having with the leadership of the governor as well as the leaders in the General Assembly around how do we ensure that students can graduate more timely? How do we encourage students to take a larger course load? Because even though that might impact their ability to work, the reality is they're more likely to graduate, the more likely to graduate more timely, and the quicker they are able to get into the workforce or onto a graduate program, it has substantial financial benefits for them. We've estimated here in Ohio that that amount for a year improvement may be over $70,000.
At Miami, have you had to eliminate or pair sections of classes to cut costs? Has that been a tactic?
The only place that we have reduced sections is where we have what we call under-enrolled courses.
Okay.
And that's one of the ways we try to make sure we're being efficient at making sure the courses that students need to graduate are available and that none of the cuts that we've implemented have been focused in areas that would delay the time to graduation. Now, we're very fortunate here. Our graduation rate in 4 years is over 68%, which is well above the national average and is larger than any other institution in Ohio, except for Ohio State, in 6 years that it takes at many of the other institutions. So it's a constant focus we have. It's one that in proposals coming from the presidents of the public universities here in Ohio, they're talking about ways with the governor, with the president of the Senate, about how do we improve the time to graduation.
Right. Funding could be based on that in the future.
That's one of the things that I think we'll continue to look at. Mm-hmm. We've been a leader in the nation in moving to having outcome-based funding. We're focused today on graduation that helps to drive improvements in the time to graduation. In the last, since 2010, I believe 2011, we've grown the number of graduates in Ohio by over 19% by making sure our funding is focus there and that the efforts of our institutions are focused there.
Scott Jessic, at InsideHigherEd.com, are you seeing other trends across the country in how universities are cutting costs?
Yes, they're doing a number of things. They're offering more online options, mm-hmm. Which can be very good for some students. But again, good online education isn't necessarily cheap, because you still want good student-faculty interaction and help desks and so forth. We're seeing institutions do a lot to encourage students to take a full course load, mm-hmm. or even an additional course load to get through. A big problem is that many students don't realize how many credits they need to take each semester to be on track to get done in four. Everything related to academic advising thus becomes very important. We're looking at institutions trying to do remedial education at institutions that have to do this, and college credit at the same time. So there are all kinds of things going on, and many of them in Ohio, but this stuff isn't I think this stuff can get oversimplified, and it gets particularly complicated at institutions with students who are maybe less competitive than those at Miami, who may come in with more educational issues and challenges.
Yeah, David Creamer, when you're going to be talking about these issues in the with, I don't know if you're on the panel that the governor has established or not, or if somebody from your institution is, but when you get together and start talking about these things before October, how does a school, you know, like Miami, talk about the same issues with a school that has a much different sort of student body in academically speaking?
And I think the point you're making is a good one. And one of the things we focused on as we're looking at these initiatives, how do we make sure they match the institution, its mission, and the students that they're serving? And so as we looked at the proposal that's come out of the Senate, one of the benefits of that is that these are individual institutional plans, not one plan for the state, because each of our institutions does meet a little bit different mission, and we need to make sure that the approach that's being taken will best serve the students that they are serving.
Scott, Jessica, we've been talking about how Ohio's public universities and colleges have gone from being state-funded to state-supported or subsidized to being located in the state of Ohio. It's a very small percentage now compared to what it once was. Is that true across the country?
Unfortunately, it is. States have very much withdrawn from the level of support they once provided. And so, again, when people complain about tuition, they are seeing the impact of state withdrawals of support. And so, again, tuition freeze sounds good, but people need to say, what are we paying for? If Ohio believes, and most experts I would guess would agree, that you need a greater share of the populace to have a degree, if you need those already going to college to come away with more skills, more ability to have good careers, it costs some money.
But the things that universities are spending on, the building and the construction that's going on. David Creamer, you can talk about this at Miami University. There's some really fabulous buildings that have gone up at Miami lately. I think it's a new student union.
Yes, we do have a new student center. And let me talk a little bit about how we did that, because
okay.
I think what gets missed is that institutions are using very different strategies today. That particular student center, we had abandoned the project, and at the request of student leaders, because they saw it as critical to their educational outcomes, the project was reinitiated, and students had advocated to even pay a fee to ensure that that facility would be available. Now, how did we approach it? One, we used three existing buildings instead of building a new building. So there is an additional connector that ties these buildings together, but it's not a brand new facility.
Mm-hmm.
60% of the funding for that building has come from philanthropy, from gifts from alumni and others. So we have a new athletic facility that's coming online, actually just came online this month. What gets missed in that, again, 75% of that money is coming from gifts, and it's going to allow us to take down a very inefficient 80-year-old building that would otherwise require us to spend $15 million on just repairs. So we're trying to think smart about these issues. We're trying to deal with our facility issues, which recognize that in the 1950s, 60s, and early 1970s, there was a tremendous building boom mm-hmm. on our campuses. We have these very old buildings that we have to figure out what to do with. And some of it will be renovation, some of it will be taking them down, some of it will be replacing them with other buildings. But for now, facilities are an important element of the way we deliver higher education.
Scott Jessick, is that when we hear David Cramer talk about what's happening at Miami University, is that typical? Is that being reflected across the country? Miami is a little bit different.
But it is typical in that buildings come from many sources.
Okay.
And you have to look again at what are the costs and who's paying for it. So, for instance, the research infrastructure at Miami and at other universities in Ohio. A lot of the money from that comes from federal grants, not from Ohio taxpayers, and it's largely removed from, say, the experience of a typical undergraduate. There are definitely big, big expenses in higher education that don't necessarily help undergraduate education. Look at intercollegiate athletics, mm-hmm. for instance, which governors don't tend to criticize because they know they're popular. Now, you have in your state Ohio State, which is one of the few places that consistently makes a profit on athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Most public colleges and universities don't, and many times they charge students fees for athletics. Fees is another area to look at when you talk about tuition freezes. Many states that have tuition freezes, then all of a sudden you have the fee for this, the fee for that. Colleges can be very creative at finding money. And again, it's not always that the student will actually save.
David Cramer, is the idea of what the governor's getting at in this budget and in the proposals leading up to the October task force recommendations, is the idea that you cut costs without further burdening the students, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
You try to find ways to be more efficient and hopefully in ways that don't diminish the quality of the educational experience.
We'll continue our conversation. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, talking about Governor Kasich's plan to cut the fat from public colleges and universities, how it might work, and what the impact would be on higher education in Ohio and on people who foot the bill for it personally, the students and their parents often. Still with us by phone is Scott Jessick. He's editor of InsideHigherEd.com. Scott, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Also, Miami University Treasurer and Vice President for Finance and Business Services, David Cramer. Thanks again, David Cramer.
It's good to be here.
You talked about, David Cramer, that the students at Miami saw the new student center as critical to the educational outcomes. How is that decided what's critical to an educational outcome?
Well, it's certainly a point that has to have some conversation and debate. And students made this point not over a short period of time. When President Hodge arrived here, one of the things that was most prevalent during his interviews was the concern about students not having a place where they could gather throughout the day, because our students weren't looking for recreational opportunities. They were looking at a place where they could meet in groups, be engaged in student organizations, and have the services that they needed to be successful in that, because it's a critical part of their leadership development. So this wasn't a decision that was made overnight. It didn't occur out of just one petition, but over several years of hearing the same point being made and being able to validate the need for that type of space.
And also something that Scott Jessick brought up earlier, how some universities are dealing with the cost crunch is with more online options. He said, however, that's not necessarily cheaper. Is that something that Miami has delved into?
Largely in regard to some of our graduate education opportunities. We are a residential campus, and our educational delivery is about having that experience on campus, because it's the interactions with faculty, it's the interactions with other students. Today, you can't fully emulate that another way. So, yes, our deliveries in classrooms changing, but again, we're maintaining that experience in a way that advantages our students.
Scott Jasik, we talked earlier about how colleges and universities are changing and have changed over the decades, primarily in who they serve. And it seems like over time, as that makeup and demographics of the student body have changed, so has what we think college ought to be and what it ought to bring to us. Some people think it ought to be something akin to a technical school, where you go in, you get a certain skill set, and you come out and you're certified in something and you get a job. That's not how I approach college at all. I went in for that whole liberal arts experience, kind of like what David Kramer was talking about.
Well, I think the important thing is that there's not a one-size-fits-all. If you look at Ohio's community and technical colleges and some of the career-oriented programs at your universities, in fact, Ohio does offer lots of options for people who want to study something specifically related to a job, and they go on and they get those jobs. But it's important to remember that for the people who are seeking out the liberal arts experience, they are not people who are expecting to spend their lives meditating or writing poetry,
right,
although there's nothing wrong with people writing poetry. Many of them are going to go on, and they're going to be business executives and creators of new businesses and governors, and they are picking up critical thinking skills, communication skills, all of which employers say they want. There's a lot of survey data that show that employers are not hyper-focused on what major you had. They're focused on broad skills, so-called soft skills. They want computer science majors, but that's not all they want. And they want computer science majors who've also read a book.
David Kramer, do you have thoughts about that?
Yes. I think there are two issues that are occurring. One, we need to be aware of how rapidly knowledge is changing and how much change students that are graduating from our universities today are going to go through in their life. And so we need to prepare them to adapt throughout that process, because they're not going to enter, work for one employer, be in a particular profession for necessarily the entire time of their professional career. So we need to prepare them for that. And a lot of the things that liberal arts education provides really helps you to adjust to the changes that are going on and adapt more readily. Now, the challenge that I think that a lot of our leaders are expressing is that there once was a time when a high school education prepared you for a profession, that you got enough through that and through working through other experiential opportunities enabled you to be a plumber or some other position. We don't have much of that today. It's suggested by Lumina that here in Ohio that I believe 67% of our positions by 2025 will require some post-secondary education. So we have this gap that is occurring, that you're not prepared for that following high school. How do we provide that in a way that is affordable and matches the needs of the workforce? And in reality, I think higher education is struggling with that today.
Scott Jasik, we talked earlier about the issue of debt. The state's 14 public universities have more than doubled the debt they owe in recent years to an unprecedented $6.5 billion. That's according to the Dayton Daily News. And I asked Tim Keene about that, and he said that they felt really comfortable that the universities were all well-situated financially and that they weren't getting into debt that they couldn't handle. But all that being said, what's going on with the debt? Is that something that's happening across the country, and is there any looming problem with that?
At most colleges, the debt isn't out of control, but we've been in a period of time with relatively low interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are a college with a secure enrollment base, and most public institutions in Ohio, I would say, fall into that category, so that you know you have tuition and other revenue coming in, many colleges have done the math and found that it is financially wise to finance construction now with debt. Now, we have also seen some small private colleges that have taken on too much debt and haven't had that steady supply of students. So, again, it's not something that I would say, oh, everyone should go out and borrow everything they can, but generally it's a pattern we've seen with colleges that aren't worried about filling their classes.
Robert Reich recently wrote a column about the issues of debt and what the universities are taking on and how that spins out to the students. Is there any ramifications for the students when it comes to that? A lot of this debt is being paid off by fees.
Yes. I mean, if an institution is paying off its debt by raising tuition, by charging fees, and if students aren't on board with that, yes, it does. But again, I would return to people should be very concerned, in my opinion, about the debt that college undergraduates are taking on to pay for their college education. In many cases, it is way too much, and in particular, there's a problem when they're not borrowing through the federal program, and they may have mm-hmm. interest rates that are higher and fewer protections. Generally, the higher debt is related to states providing less in appropriations. And because when they do that, tuition goes up, aside from a tuition freeze, or you have students taking longer to graduate. The issue that doesn't get as much attention is the state withdrawal of its share of supporting public higher education.
We have an email from a listener. It's a Miami University graduate. I'll warn you, David Kramer. The writer says, I graduated from Miami University in May 2014. I spent my time working toward 2 degrees. Additionally, I had to work and usually had 2 to 3 jobs. Despite all of this, I and the supposed cost-cutting measures your guest has outlined, I graduated with $90,000 in student debt. The new student union is an absolute slap in the face to the low-income students like myself. The student leaders who wanted the union are a vocal minority of very high-income students who can afford to take positions in student government and don't need jobs to support themselves. There's a lot of issues going on there. One I wanted to ask you about, David Kramer, is to what extent does a university feel responsible about advising a student before they enroll, before they start paying the tuition, about whether or not they can really afford it?
Well, it's something that we provide information to students and families about, and we hope to be able to better inform them about that responsibility and hopefully help them to make decisions that match them. Now, the challenge is that every student is in a bit of a different place and has different goals, and so at the end of the day, we can't make those choices for the student. We can only provide information and support that hopefully help them to make the right choice for them.
If I could enter here
for
a sec, 90,000 really is a concerning figure.
Yes.
The average student debt is in the high 20s these days for a 4-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so some colleges are getting much, much more aggressive. So, for instance, they may not be able to prevent somebody from borrowing, but before they certify somebody for a loan, some colleges are making that person do a budget that shows how they would repay what they would owe upon graduation. Then they figure out what kind of job the person wants and is likely to get, where they're going to live, what their rent is going to be. And these sorts of exercises convince some students that they need to look for alternatives without borrowing. We wrote about Ohio Northern University, which recently changed its rules such that if you change your majors, you have to talk to a financial aid consultant to see, will that result in you having another semester or another year, and how are you going to pay for it? to me, I don't know this student's circumstances, mm-hmm. but I worry about the advice somebody got who ended up with $90,000 for an undergraduate degree.
Mm-hmm.
Something didn't work right there.
The point that I would make is the average student who takes out loans here, our average debt when they graduate is $27,000.
It's in line with...
And so part of what we get are extremes, and I think we have to make sure we're attending to those. But we also need to make sure we understand what it generally is occurring at institutions. And I think, again, you'll find that our public institutions here in Ohio are doing things to assist students in making good choices.
What about what Ohio Northern's done, David Kramer? Does that make sense to you as an administrator at Miami University?
I think providing more help and support to students in this area are things that we have to continue to do, and finding better ways to do that is something we have to be open to.
I want to go back to an email that we received from a listener earlier in the program before either of you joined us. The listener wrote, "The highest growth in cost for higher education has been in administration. The salaries of deans is astonishing, and it seems the number of them continues to grow. How does the state expect the administration to, quote, cut the fat, end quote, when the deans and higher administrators are the fat?" Let's go to you, Scott Jasek, first about that issue. It's something that they're publicly funded universities or public universities and colleges, so we get to see how much they earn. What do you make of it?
Well, there are definitely institutions that if you go through line by line, you'll find yourself thinking, do we really need that? But much of what classifies as administration actually relates to things that people need and want. Academic advising, and people in academic advising generally aren't super rich. That relates directly to completion. Libraries, career centers. There are no doubt there are overpaid administrators out there. But when you look at a lot of the positions, they are in fact things that students need and want. And I don't think that the majority of people who work in higher education are earning outrageous salaries.
Yeah, David Kramer, you want the best.
I don't think we necessarily want the best. We want to make sure that the people that we employ in positions are able to deliver the best results for our students and for the outcomes the institution wants to achieve. And unfortunately, we're in a talent-based world, and talented people are in limited numbers. And so there is some pressure that we have felt in keeping up with compensation. Now, how do we try to deal with this? As I talked earlier, we've gone through multiple rounds of looking at how to reduce the cost of higher education here. A lot of that has been focused on our administrative areas. In my own areas, across all levels, we've reduced staffing by 22% since 2009. Across the institution more widely, administrative staffing has been reduced by 12%. So I think efforts are undergoing. We had outside consultants in Accenture. We continue to look at ways of how to make sure we're right size for what we need, and that the staffing that we do employ and that compensation level is really helping us to accomplish our goals and better support our students.
Scott Jasek, we only have about a minute left. I'm just wondering what you make of what's going on across the country. Where do you see the brightest hope for the average student trying to pay tuition?
I think the brightest hope is that people are finally talking about these issues. If you look at what happened over the last 15 to 20 years, the big story is the state withdrawal. And people really haven't connected the issues. When governors and legislators say, "I promise to cut your taxes or never increase taxes," in many cases, what they're also saying is, "I'm going to cut spending on higher ed." They don't advertise that. People need to connect the whole picture. And I think when they do, they will find elements of higher education that maybe they deserve cutting, but they will also focus more on what does it cost to deliver a high-quality education to different kinds of students. And you need to get there before you can figure out if a given tuition policy or aid policy or appropriations policy is right.
Scott Jessick, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Scott Jessick, he's editor at InsideHigherEd.com. And David Kramer, thanks to you as well. Really appreciate your time today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
David Kramer, he's vice president for finance and business services and treasurer at Miami University. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.